Hey, welcome back to my regular listeners and to all the new listeners. I am Tammy, and this is Women Committing Crimes. Sorry this is a week late, but last week was the first week of school and ridiculously busy, and first week of school for everybody's a bitch. Just saying, especially after coming back from the pandemic of being gone for a year and a half and doing everything through Zoom, now we are back in person 100%. Luckily, most of my students, probably about 99% of them, are actually wearing masks. I wear a mask too, so far, so good. But tiring and trying to get the schedule worked out, especially working out after, you know, after work a couple nights a week at least. Weekends are a that prime choice time when you don't necessarily want to do other things other than just sit there and stare into space and go, because you're tired. However, got to get things done, don't we? All right, so I should be back on track, though, uploading every 2 weeks. Hopefully, if you're a regular listener, you liked the changes I made, the beginnings, all that. So far, the consensus is good, according to all the emails I've gotten, though. So all those emails, by the way, are marvelous. Keep sending them in. I'll read one today in the feedback portion in just a little bit of the podcast, so stay tuned. And remember, if you like or preferably love this podcast, please give it 5 stars on Apple Podcast and give me some feedback in the comments section. The ratings on podcasting sites helps this podcast get more exposure, helps it grow, makes it more popular. And I absolutely love that, and I love the feedback, and I'd like to give you feedback about your feedback. All right, I hope you enjoy, and I hope you were able to get caught up on season one. Here is season two, episode two. Today we're going to talk about Susan Newell. First, though, let's start with that P.S. section. I have some postscripts about, or a postscript about, Elizabeth Holmes again. Last time, 3 weeks ago, with the season opener of Lorena Bobbitt, we talked about how her trial has been postponed many times, mostly due to COVID. Elizabeth Holmes is our most popular woman committing crime that we talked about. She's in episode 18 of season 1. So, here's the news, though. She had her baby. His name is William Holmes Evans, and he was born on July 10th in Redwood City, California. Woo! Welcome to the world! Spawn of, I can't say spawn of Satan. She's not that evil. She's just, well, welcome to the crime, crime time, right? But anyway, so let's go on to the feedback section. I have an email at womencommittingcrimes.com from Shauna Garcia, who doesn't say where she's from, unfortunately. That's cool though. But here's the letter. Quote, "Hey, just want to let you know that I've listened to a couple of episodes of your podcast, and I really like it. My only suggestion is to talk a little slower. And, are all the curse words necessary? Other than that, I love the subject matter and look forward to the new episode. Best to you." Thanks, Shauna, for your feedback. Yeah, I've been told multiple times that I speak a little fast. I get excited. You know, I'm working on that. It's difficult, especially when I do get worked up about some of these bitches. Oops, sorry. Not sorry for the cuss words. I am who I am. It's what I do. I've always cussed like a sailor. Of course, you know, I know when to and when not to. My podcast, my language. That's why I also said it was explicit. But please do keep listening. Maybe you can overlook that minor part, right? And now, as Tone Loke says, let's do it. All right, today we jump to Scotland. Yeah, I think that's the best I can do. I try to work on the Irish or the Scottish brogue. I listen to YouTube videos. I watch Shrek. I watch So I Married an Axe Murderer. Shout out both of those for Mike Myers. I listen to the Bay City Rollers again. Saturday night. But I can't do a Scottish brogue very well. So if I try and it's cringy to you, just roll with it, right? I'm not going to do it throughout the whole thing, unfortunately, but here we go. So now we're going to do what I call, it's a new segment, and I call it History Lesson Timeline. I'm a fucking history teacher. What do you expect, right? So these timelines won't necessarily be extremely detailed. They've been in all of the podcasts, by the way, all the episodes that I've had. However, I'm actually naming it now. They're not extremely detailed here and there. They're mainly to set the stage for me, set the stage for you, at least give you a little background information sometimes of the people and the places that surround this woman, that surround the crime. Again, not too extensive. However, if you are interested in more detail about these things, Google is awesome, right? All right, back to Scotland. 3000 BCE, Scotland is populated by nomadic hunter-gatherers and eventually farmers, just like every place else in the world. The agricultural revolution or Neolithic revolution hits that area. Fast forward to 124 CE. That's AD to those of you who are still stuck back in the 80s. The Romans called it Caledonia, which was a derivative of the tribal name Caledonis. I guess that's how you spell it. A name which means possessing hard feet, which always reminds me of hobbits. But anyway, the Romans were not fond of the Picts, P-I-T-C-S, which were the main peoples, that and the Celts, that lived in Scotland at that time, which is why they built a wall called Hadrian's Wall. The Romans built the wall to defend against the crazy Picts, P-I-C-T-S. The wall took about 6 years to build and was 73 miles long. Later, the Antonine Wall was also built even further north, and this wall separates what's considered the highlands and the lowlands of Scotland. The Romans never really conquered Scotland. I'm going to do it through the whole thing, so just get used to it, right? Block that part out if you want, but I'm going to call it Scotland throughout the whole thing. The Picts, by the way, were called that from the term Picti or Picti. I'm not up on my Latin, which meant painted ones, because they would paint themselves blue long before William Wallace, by the way, and we'll get to him later, but they would paint themselves blue and come running wild and berserker at the Romans, who had no idea what to do about this, but build a wall, right? In 563, now we're all in CE, right? Christianity made its way to Scotland with the Romans and continued thereafter. The Vikings invaded, kinda, in 800 CE. They didn't stick around all that long. Then in 1040, the Picts, P-I-T-C-S, set up the kingdom of Alba. And this is the real Macbeth of Shakespeare's play of the same name. Macbeth, the king, died in 1057. 1235 is the earliest mention of Scottish Parliament. 297, William Wallace, you know him as Braveheart if you watched the movie back in the 90s before Mel Gibson let everyone know he's a crazy racist. Anyway, William Wallace was a fighter against the English King Edward I, who wanted Scotland desperately. He sent troops to invade. King Edward did. There was a huge battle, and Scotland won on September 11th, 1297. 1314, that's the date, 1314 CE, June 23rd, Robert the Bruce took the throne and won against the English in the Battle of Bannockburn. Guessing. Anyway, Bannockburn. I'm guessing. 1320 CE, the Declaration of See, here's the thing. Scottish is not a language that you can sound out. Okay? Arbroath proclaims Scotland an independent sovereign state. Here's something cool. 1457, golf began. For those of you that like golf. Boring. 1494 is the first recorded reference to whiskey, ushkva, which is spelled V-I-S-G-E, separate word, B-E-A-T-H-A. I told you, you can't sound that out. Ushkva. I looked it up, like, and I had like five different pronunciations. So that's the best one I could, that's the one that seemed like the most agreed upon. 1542. Now here's something that's a little bit longer here. Birth of Mary, Queen of Scots. She is crowned queen at the ripe old age of 6 days old. She spent her youth in France. Of course, they have like a regent or, you know, somebody rule in her place until she's old enough, until she gets to an age of majority, which by this time she returns to Scotland at the age of 19. Eventually, she was imprisoned for 19 years and was beheaded for treason against England, because she was queen for a little while, right? And then she is called Bloody Mary because she killed like tons of Protestants. Not that, you know, Queen Elizabeth I, her half-sister, by the way, wasn't any better, because she did kill a lot of Catholics, so, you know, there's that. But She had been queen for a bit because when Henry's only son, her father was Henry VIII and Catherine of Aragon. So technically she was Henry VIII's oldest child, but of course, you know, thrones go to men first. So Henry eventually has a son. His name's Edward. He dies quite young, actually, because he is he has issues. Anyway, so when he dies, Mary gets the throne. Then she's deposed off the throne, and then she tries to get it back from Queen Elizabeth I, her half-sister, right? But her cuckoo-ness got her, you know, dethroned. Lizzie took over, and anyway, you know, she's beheaded. Just like Lizzie's mom, right? 1560, John Knox led the Reformation of Scotland. This is where the Scottish Parliament abolished the authority of the Pope over the national church, and this is when Scotland becomes a Protestant. Not everyone is happy about this, though. 1603, Queen Lizzo dies. Her nephew, Bloody Mary's son, by the way, James VI, inherits the throne, including Scotland. This is called the Union of Crowns. He's, by the way, the King James Bible guy, the one that changed the Bible, took books out of the Bible, rearranged things, pretty much made it the way he wanted it. Then again, Thomas Jefferson wrote a Bible also, doing the same thing, only he didn't, like, you know, it doesn't become like the Bible of a whole religion. Anyway, 1707, England and Scotland are officially united with the Act of Union. Now we're going to fast forward to 1893, and Susan Newell is born in Oban, Scotland. Here's some famous people from Scotland, just as an aside. Some people you might have heard of: Sean Connery, Tilda Swinton, Ewan McGregor, James McAvoy, Robert Watson, Alexander Fleming, just to name a few. Many inventions have come from Scotland also, including Dolly the cloned sheep, HPV vaccines, which I'm always for the vaccines, and Grand Theft Auto video game. Now, and you know, I'm bragging a little bit about Scotland because part of my family heritage is from Scotland, like quite a bit of it. So, you know, I'm you know, a little bit partial to the British Isles, but definitely Scotland. So anyway, now, what about Susan Newell? What did she do? Who did she do it to? Why did she do it? Well, as stated before, Susan Newell was born into poverty in what is now the resort town of Oban, Scotland. While she was young, she worked in low-paying jobs and decided to move to Glasgow in 1910. Glasgow was a port city on the River Clyde in the lowlands of Scotland. It became prosperous due to trade and shipbuilding. It also became a cultural hub and now has a population of 1,680,669, which is kind of a large population for a country, a total country, a country with a total population of 5.5 million people. So it has at least, you know, almost 2 million people come just from that one city. Well, after Susan moved to Glasgow, she continued to work a series of low-paying jobs. My guess is that, you know, she's born into poverty, so she's born into peasantry. Although this is later, so peasantry isn't kind of like the same thing, right? Because we're moving into the 20th century here, by the way. But she's born into poverty. There's no information about her parents or her past before she was 19. So, you know, she probably didn't know how to read. She did washerwoman work, that kind of stuff. Uneducated, right? She married John MacLeod of the Clan MacLeod. Sorry, Highlander fans, I had to throw that in there, right? He was 24 years old, and when World War I started in 1914, he enlisted. He was killed in northern France. At the time that he enlisted, Susan was pregnant, and in 1915 or thereabouts, she gave birth to her daughter, Janet. All right. Nothing is known about the two, Janet and Susan, from 1915 to 1922, so here's where it gets a little weird. Okay. Susan married again to John Newell. She had a thing for Johns. John worked at the British Tube Works. He was laid off at Christmas time in 1922 and then was out of work for about 6 months. They both drank a lot and argued a lot. They had moved to an apartment building in Coatbridge, about 8.5 miles east of Glasgow. Then John left, so it seemed like she was abandoned. She's about to get evicted, by the way. Also, her landlord, you know, was like, hey, her landlady was like, hey, give me some money. And Susan had no money. All right. June 20th, 1923. It was Carnival Day in Coatbridge. And I can't find what that is, because if you look up Carnival Day now, it's the St. Patrick's Day celebration. But that didn't start till 2003. So I'm not really sure what Carnival Day is. But anyway, people were out and about. in this. A 13-year-old paperboy, so way back in the day, boys often sold newspapers, like would walk around and say, hey, get your newspaper, get your your news, get your updates, all that, whatever. So that's what he did. His name was John Stone, I swear to God, and I'm not kidding that she has a thing for Johns. He was going door to door selling his newspapers. He went to Susan's door. She let him in. Janet, who was about 8 at the time, some things say 6, but if she was born in 1915, and this is 1923, she wouldn't have been 6. But anyway, she came home from playing outside. John Stone's father reported him missing at 11 p.m. The next morning, Janet and Susan were seen pulling a child's go-kart up the road. It looked like it was full of clothes. Now, go-karts, they're not, it's basically just a kid's cart. Think of it that way. It was full of clothes. Janet sat on it a couple times. They were seen again in another part of town. Thomas Dixon, a delivery driver, offered to give them a ride and their cart, a ride to Glasgow. When he dropped them off, he helped put the cart on the ground, but it started to tip and dump over. And when that happened, a head and a foot appeared. Okay, shocking, right? Okay. Susan pushed Dixon aside and said, I'll manage it, leave it alone. So picture it, right? This woman, Helen Elliott, a local resident, looked out her kitchen window right at that time and saw the whole entire thing. Saw the head pop out, saw the foot pop out. She and her sister Mary followed Susan and Janet, okay? One of them went to the police. Doesn't matter which one, right? And eventually, Susan came to a dead end. She ditches the cart and Janet and climbed the wall because she knew by this time she could hear and see the police coming. But the police officer that responded, Thomas McGinnett, grabbed her as she was trying to climb the wall and arrested her. She was taken to the Eastern Police Station. All right, so picture that, right? Here's this woman and this 8-year-old. They're about the same size, 6 and 8, so it doesn't really matter. Child. They have this go-kart, and it's not like, a wide-wheeled go-kart. This is like a go-kart, again, from the 1920s, so it looks a bit different than maybe what if you're thinking the go-karts that are at, like, amusement parks. It's not like that. It's higher, with a more narrow base. But anyway, so there's this woman, this young child, girl child, and they've got this go-kart with supposedly a whole bunch of clothes in it, but pretty much everybody, I mean, it wasn't just these people that saw it. Like, everybody in the street saw this go-kart with this head and foot stick out, and she, like, shoves it back in, and she and Janet are running down the street, pushing it down the street. They come to a dead end, and basically Susan said, fuck it, and left Janet with the go-kart, with the dead body, and started to climb the wall. And that's when the police grab her and pull her down. What was her end game there? Just to leave her 8-year-old child there. Anyway, so here's Susan's story. She said that it was her husband that had killed John Stone, the 13-year-old paperboy. She said that she and her husband had fought, and he hit her and the paperboy. She said that she told her husband that she was going to the police, then he grabbed the boy, put him on the bed, and choked him. Susan said that she fainted, and then when she came to, her husband was gone, and the body was there and dead and was to be disposed of. Now, So the paperboy, the medical examiner said that his windpipe had burst, which is like signs of choking usually, and his head was bashed. So, evidently, that's how he died. So with her statement about her husband, the police start to look for John Newell. However, neighbors Mrs. Brown and Mrs. Morgan and landlord Annie Young, here's their story. They said they heard, they saw the boy go upstairs. They heard 3 thuds. They thought Susan was packing because, again, she's being evicted, right? And then Annie said Susan asked her if she had a box, and she said no, and then they never saw the boy come back downstairs. Okay. Here's John Newell's story. Again, right, they're looking for him because she is blaming him. She's saying that it was him that killed the boy. All right, so here's John Newell's story. He had left the apartment to go get his paycheck, like a severance paycheck or something, and go to his brother's funeral. He then went to his father's house and spent the night in Parkhead Model Lodging House. Then he went back to Coatbridge and was in town when the boy was killed, but he was at another lodging house. He had read about the murder in the Scotland newspaper and immediately went to the police station to proclaim his innocence. They arrested him, but later on in the story, you know, they're put on trial later on. He's found not guilty due to his alibi being solid and all charges were dropped. So he was at that lodging house. He was seen at that lodging house when the murder was committed. So therefore, you know, he's free of charge. So let's hear about from Janet. Okay. So Janet's testimony is pretty much what most of this hinges on. Again, a child, but at first she corroborated Susan's story, saying, quote, "My daddy choked him with his hand and he died," end quote. But at the trial, she told a different story. Remember, she's about 8 or so, right? Okay. So here's a child, first of all, who's giving testimony on the witness stand in front of her mom, right? Which, it seems to me, though, that her mom is a terrible person, so maybe it was easier for her. I don't know. So she said that when she went home after playing outside, her mom took her to a public house where Janet waited outside while her mom got some beer, wine, and whiskey. Now, what she insinuated was that she had never had money before and now had some money. So after she waited outside, her mom comes out with all the booze. They go home, and Janet said she saw, quote, "a wee boy dead on the couch," end quote, and that her mom sat there and drank the alcohol. She said her mother told her to keep quiet and that her mom tried to pull up the floorboards so she could put the body in there. Then she said that her mom told her to tell the lie about her stepdad and that they put the boy in the cart and started to go toward Glasgow. Now, remember, Glasgow is only 8.5 miles, so. The trial was held. So there's a damning witness, you know, to this whole type of situation, because again, there's a lot of detail from that child, right? And you know, she admitted that her mother told her to lie. The trial was held in 1923. There was a plea for temporary insanity for Susan. The defense asked a medical profession about it. They said, "Have you heard evidence that this woman was deserted by her husband, left with no money, and about to be turned out onto the street? Is that the kind of thing that might affect her mental balance?" The medical professional replied, quote, "It might make her desperate owing to the cruelty of the situation," end quote. Now, the judge himself asked, quote, "Is there anything in the evidence to suggest at the time of the crime the woman was suffering from frenzy or insanity?" End quote. So straight to the point, right? The reply by the medical professional, quote, "I've heard nothing here, nor from her, that it existed," end quote. So there it is, right? The defense is trying to do temporary insanity. It sounds to me like she's just, you know, an ignorant, bat-crap crazy person who really wanted to drink and probably said to, this is just in my guessing, right? Okay. Probably said to the little paper boy, "Hey, give me your money." And he said, "Hey, no." And she said, "Hey, give me your money." And then they fought, and then she killed him. Maybe by accident, right? She's probably choking him, going, "Give me the money," you know, back and forth, and crushes his windpipe, because it doesn't take all that much pressure to do that. And especially if you're ignorant and don't know about that, that can happen. And then, you know, she throws him on the floor, he hits his head when he hits the floor, whatever, right? All right, so the trial lasted only 2 days. The jury only took 37 minutes to come up with a verdict of guilty, but they did recommend mercy. But unfortunately for Susan Newell, Scottish law said that the penalty for murder, pretty much under all circumstances, was death. There was an appeal with public support, but it was refused. So October 23rd, she's taken to the gallows. The straps that secured the arms were not tight enough, and the executioner is trying to put the hood over her head. She grabs the hood because she got her arm out, tossed it away, and said, "Don't put that thing on me." Then she was hung until dead. Susan Newell was a woman committing a crime, probably a crime of passion, accident probably. Nobody maybe thought about that, but she was at least probably trying to rob the little boy either way. And just as a side note, she was the last woman hanged as a capital punishment in Scotland. All right. Thank you to my wonderful and loving husband, Doug, who designed the logos for this podcast, as well as the podcast Off Kilter No Filter. Off Kilter No Filter is the podcast with me and Byron Alexander, which, by the way, I'm going to have on as a guest. I haven't had a guest on this podcast before. He and I have had many, many guests on our podcast, Off Kilter, No Filter, because we discuss everything and anything, and this one is kind of more specialized. However, I think it's time for a guest. I think y'all would like to hear another voice besides mine droning on. But I'm going to ask him, and I'll let you know when that's going to happen. My husband, Doug, also designed the logo for my new podcast, Secret Spy Sisters. It's a podcast about women spies through all periods of history and around the globe. That one was published the day before Lorena Bobbitt was, so August 2nd. That one is going to be on a monthly basis. Because I've got three podcasts. And I am a full-time school teacher, high school teacher, middle and high school teacher, social studies teacher, of course. So it takes a little bit of time. But again, once I get my schedule all worked out, I'm going to figure it out, right? But it does take some time. So the Secret Spy Sisters, I'm excited about it. It's really cool. Come see it, right? All of these podcasts can be found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and any other podcaster that you use. This one is on iHeartRadio also. The other two are not, but this one is. And Secret Spy Sisters will be on Apple Podcasts soon. However, Off Kilter, No Filter is also on there. Make sure to give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. I mentioned this before. Give us 5 stars, favorite us on Anchor, whatever podcaster you use, do whatever rating system they have, please. It lets me know that you're listening for sure. It also lets other people know that you're listening. Women Committing Crimes and Secret Spy Sisters are also at my website, www.womencommittingcrimes.com, where you can find the podcast, pictures, as well as lists of all the women I plan on having an episode on for Women Committing Crimes and Secret Spy Sisters. There's also a suggestions tab where you can let me know which women you'd like to hear about. Like last time I had a letter about Lorena Bobbitt, and we did it. So, you know, let me know. I'll put her in there right away. Thank you also, Byron Alexander, for the music for this podcast. The intro is Forgive Me, and the outro, it's a weird word, is Who, both from his way awesome album Square One, which you can find on Spotify, Amazon. He has a YouTube channel also. I think you can find it pretty much wherever you get music. It'll get you moving and thinking. It's marvelous. I love it too. It's got good driving tunes, definitely workout tunes. If you have a comment, question, or suggestion for an episode, please email me at, again, Women Committing Crimes. This one is womencommittingcrimes@gmail.com. I'll even read your email as you see in the feedback section or the comments, unless you'd rather remain anonymous, and that's fine too. So go ahead and tell me that. Go to https. /anchor.fm/Elizabeth-Chase and click the support button. Please, you can make a one-time donation or sponsor on a monthly basis. Thank you, Liz, for doing that. It would be greatly appreciated. You can also tweet at CrimesWomen or join the Women Committing Crimes Facebook group. And I hope to see you there. Whew. Right. All right. Now it's time to go into that fishbowl. All right. You know, it's kind of weird. I will say this. It's kind of weird that I call it a fishbowl because, you know, there's that stereotype about women and smells. And I always hate to mention it, but I know somebody out there is like, fishbowl? What? That's weird. Okay, well, I'm still going to use it, though, because I have nothing else to do the drawings out of, and I think it's cool. So here it is. Get over it, right? Okay. Here we go. Oh, sweet. Ah, sweet, sweet. Mary Read. It's been a while, God, since like season one, like episode 3 or something, since we've talked about a female pirate. So go Mary Read. I can't wait. So I will see you in the deuces. Bye-bye.